So last week I started a new sermon series we're calling Identity Crisis, trying to figure out who we are and, as I said, ultimately whose we are. And what's really interesting is how much feedback you all have given me about how helpful this series is, and we're only 1 week in. Right? I have had more appointments come out of week one in this series than anything else. So I am hopeful that I can close some loops today. So I don't have, just kidding, you can always set up appointments with me. But the point is, what I find is really interesting about this is when we're seeking to get at the core of who we are, it is actually something that touches almost every single one of us. Who am I? It's a question that we start asking from an age of about middle school on. And I think many of us get stuck in that sort of 12 to 15 year old figuring out who we are. And we spend much of our life going, I still don't know who I am. I mean, how many people have told me that they recreate themselves over and over again? Parents who have children and then their kids move out of the house. And then they go, who are we without the kids? Because we put our identity in so many different things. Great movies are about figuring out and journeying together with people about who you are. The Wizard of Oz, right? Great movie about people trying to figure out who they are. And they're on this journey with other people and they're going together. And ultimately, they want to get to the end and go, who am I? So that's what this series is about. We're going to seek to figure out in the midst of all of this, this life, this journey, who are we? And not who are we necessarily as a community, but who am I as an individual? We started last week with the story of Jacob, and we're following Jacob's life in this series. And he has a really convoluted story. And I'm going to fill you in a little bit this morning, and I'm going to keep going. Jacob starts off, and he's born to parents Isaac and Rebecca. And Isaac and Rebecca have waited 20 years to have a child. And they don't get just one. They get a two-for-one special, right? They get twins. And they get Jacob and Esau as their children. From the very beginning, the story says that Jacob was trying to steal from Esau. He wanted his identity from the very beginning. He wants to be the first out, so he tries to pull at him. He wants to have everything that Esau has. In fact, we got in the story last week where he got Esau to get to the point where he sold him his birthright for a bowl of soup. Because he wanted the birthright. He wanted to be the firstborn. And what we found out last week was that a lot of this stemmed around the fact that Isaac had a deep love, Isaac the father, had a deeper love for Esau than he did for Jacob. And that's where the identity was really bothering him. So in between last week and where we're going to read this week in Scripture, something really weird happens. It's time for Isaac to die. He's getting old. He's the father, and he's getting really old. And when in biblical times, when a dad would die, he would offer a blessing to the child, the eldest son. And what the blessing was it was, here's all your inheritance, which the eldest was going to get most of. Here's all your inheritance. Here is a blessing on you and the people that you have to follow. And here is some information I just want to give you about your life. So it was something that was really important for a father to give his son. Now, at this point in the story, Isaac has gotten blind. And Rebekah, the mother, and Jacob, the son, devise a plan so that Jacob can steal the blessing from Esau. So Esau, as we heard in the very beginning, is hairy. He's got red hair when he comes out. That's an interesting biblical note. But he's hairy, so Jacob's solution of fooling his father is to go and get hair and put it all over him. So he goes in, Isaac goes, who are you? You don't sound like my son, Esau. And Jacob goes, but I am, Dad. He touches the fur. He goes, you must be because you're hairy. I mean, that is the distinguishing factor that poor Esau gets in the story. He's hairy, right? So he says, you're hairy. You must be my son Esau. So he offers the blessing. He gives it all to Jacob. Esau comes in, just like any good Lifetime movie. Esau comes in, and he finds out the blessing's already been given, and he is angry. And his desire now is to go after his brother. He's going to get him. Jacob hears about this. He's afraid for his life, and he runs. And that's where we end in the story before we read today. Genesis 28, verses 10 to 19. It says, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head, and he lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and the east, to the north and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey, I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. Another fascinating step in Jacob's story. This is a crazy biblical narrative here. Crazy biblical story. Jacob has gone into hiding from his brother. He doesn't want to die. And I want to point out something interesting about stealing someone else's identity, trying to be someone else. Do you notice, as soon as Jacob steals Esau's identity, he goes on the run? Do you think that is a mistake in the story? He takes his identity and then he heads off in another direction. Because stealing someone else's identity, you cannot be your true self. So he goes and he tries to become Esau, and as a result, he runs off in another direction. He runs from all that he has ever known. He actually runs from the identity that God gave him into a different place. Now, in this story, God appears to Jacob while he's running away from Esau's hatred, while he's running away from Esau's rage. Think about it. Jacob's desire to have what Esau had has led to some terrible things. Esau is angry. His father on his deathbed was filled with rage about his son. There's danger. Jacob doesn't feel safe. He's running in the other direction. I mean, everything about this is bad. Jacob has to leave the only person who the Bible has ever told us that really loves him, his mother, Rebekah. He has left his safety net, his identity and who he is, and he has run in another direction. Here's something really interesting about Jacob's journey. Jacob is the grandson of Abraham. And in this story, he is traveling from Beersheba north to Haran. Well, Abraham came from Haran when God gave him the promised land, and guess where the promised land was? Beersheba. So the land that God had given them, the place that was given to Abraham for safety and for promise and for goodness and for multiplication in their lives, the place where their identity was formed, Jacob gets up and runs from it and heads back to the place where Abraham didn't have his identity. I think that is a fascinating thing that the scripture points out very specifically, the points where they were. Friends, when we try to steal someone else's identity, we will run away from the promised land identity that God has given us. We will head in the absolute opposite direction. I also think it's interesting that in the middle of his journey, Jacob has to stop. Now, he stops very practically because he's tired. Right? It's nighttime. It's also not safe to travel in the dark. The sun has gone down, and he stops, and he pauses. And it's in the midst of that pause that something happens. He is reminded that even though he has screwed up and messed up and done terrible things, who is still with him along the journey? God. God is still with him. So if you're somebody who's here today and you're like, man, I have messed up my life. I have done things that are junk, and I've made bad decisions. The reminder in this story is that it doesn't matter if you try to steal the birthright and the blessing of your brother, which would have been a horrible thing in biblical times, God will still be with you. God will journey with you. And that's the promise that Jacob gets in the middle of this moment. God is still with him. I think it is a beautiful thing, friends, that in the middle of our junk, in the middle of our mess, so many people, their struggle with the church is that they think the church believes that they have no problems, that there are no challenges. And the message, the central message of the Bible is that, yes, humanity, we have problems. But in the midst of our problems, God will be with us. In the midst of our challenges, God still loves us. Jacob is a refugee running. And in this moment, he fully encounters God in the midst of his running in the other direction. There are a couple of things I want to share about this story this morning that I hope will resonate with you in your own life. I think if we want to find our own identity, and we believe our identity might actually be found in God, I think we have to pause and create space for God. I don't think Jacob made that decision. I think he fell asleep. And it was in the middle of the silence and the sleep that he was able to be still and listen for God. I think we look a lot of places for who we are. When I meet with people and I talk to people about their identity, they're looking for it in places of work, right? What's my identity in my career? We're looking for places in our family. We're looking for places in our neighborhood, in our community, in our system. But how often do we pause and look for our identity in God? How much do we say, God, I don't even know who I am? And create space, because it's in the middle of that space that we can hear from God. It's in the middle of that place. Now, friends, if we live in Northern Virginia, that's a hard thing, right? To create quiet and space, to be still. So maybe it will be when you're sleeping. But that means we're required to sleep for that to happen. To be still and to create that space for God. Irwin McManus was a pastor of a big church out in California. And called Mosaic, and I've been following him for years and years and years. I think he's an interesting guy, and he wrote this book called The Barbarian Way. And there's a story in this book about he and his daughter, and they're vacationing in New Zealand off in Wellington, right? That's a cool place, right? They're vacationing, and he goes out. They rented a jet ski one day, and he goes out on the jet ski, and he takes it full throttle because he wants to make sure everything's going to be safe. And he goes out on this jet ski, and he's riding it, and he's just tearing things up, and all's going really well. And he comes back and his daughter says, he has a teenage daughter, and she says, Dad, I want to ride today too. So she gets on his back and she's holding on tight, and there is a beautiful thing in a child holding on to their parent. And she's holding on to him and he's hitting the waves and everything is going really, really well until all of a sudden he feels her lose her grip and she yells, stop! He floods the engine, he turns it off, and they start drifting. And he can only imagine what must be going on in his daughter's life. And he turns around and he goes, honey, are you okay? And she said, my hair was in my eyes. I couldn't see. And he looks around at her and he says, sweetie, I just flooded the engine of the jet ski because you couldn't see. The story goes on that it took them about an hour to be rescued because they were just floating out in the water on the jet ski. And when his daughter very, very calmly looked at him and said, Daddy, this experience wouldn't be anything if I couldn't see. If I couldn't see and experience this ride, then what was the point? And he said they had this beautiful conversation over that hour while he was frustrated that they were just floating, waiting to be saved, where his daughter said, Dad, I don't want to see life with my eyes closed. I want to experience life with my eyes open. And I wonder how many of us, when it comes to our identity, are seeing our life with our eyes closed. Friends, if we want to experience who God has created us to be, then we must open our eyes widely. And the way that we can do that is to create space for God to show us something. To be still enough to open our eyes, open our ears, and be willing to experience what God has for us. Now, for you, creating space might look like morning time, it might look like evening time, it might look like turning off the radio during your commute. It might mean meditating, whatever it is. But to be still and create that space is a really important thing. Now, we can create space all day, and that's really cool, but I think the second thing we get from this is we actually have to listen to God. So not just create the space, but listen to God. What do I mean by that? I think creating space is one thing, but pausing long enough during that space to hear is a whole different thing. I don't know about you, but when I try to create silence, there are a lot of different voices that come in. And that voice might be the sound of the air conditioning that's going on. It might be the phone ringing. It might be just the voices of me telling myself what I need to get at Target this week. But there are lots of voices that come in. And when you hear these voices and you listen to them, it's very difficult to figure out what are voices from God and what are on my list of things that I need to do today. I mean, I rarely have had the experience, maybe once, that Jacob had where the words were so clear that I knew exactly what was going on. So to listen for the voice of God and to decipher whether that's God's voice or something else's voice is to really compare these things to the nature of God. When I hear something, does that align with a God of love, a God of welcome, a God of encouragement, a God who desires the best for me and to turn away from the things that aren't the best for me? Because if it doesn't, if the voice in your head says you're not valuable, you're not worth it, you're not important, then that doesn't align with the voice of God and I wouldn't listen to it. Because that's not the message that God has for each of us. This message is a message of importance and a message of love about our identity. See, Jacob heard God say that God would not leave him or forsake him no matter what. Does the message get any better than that? Whatever junk you're going through, whatever decisions you're going through, I remember years and years ago, I was working with students and this young girl got up to give her story. And I think I've told some of you this before. And she said, and then there was this period of time where God left me for a while. And then God came back. And that was her way of describing that she had had time in her life where she didn't have faith and then time where she did. And I remember sitting down with her afterwards and I said, honey, I don't believe God ever left you. I don't believe that ever happened. What I believe is that we close ourselves off to God at different seasons in our life. And there are seasons where we're more open. And in this story, Jacob is more open because he hears the voice of God and it aligns with the nature of God that he knows. And here's the third thing. I think that finding our identity entails actually responding to what God says. That's the hardest part. I actually don't think hearing from God's the hardest part. It's doing it. Because what God tells Jacob in this story is pretty scary. Go back to your brother that's trying to kill you. That is a scary, scary message. But God very clearly says, I will be with you. The message isn't go back to your brother who's trying to kill you. The message is go and I will be with you. Go and I will be faithful. And y'all, we have trouble responding to people who are trying to encourage us to do something hard. Do you agree? We have trouble with that in our workplaces from a childhood. I was reading this story this week about a big string of fires that happened in California back in 2003. And the biggest challenge they had wasn't the fires. You know what the biggest challenge they had? People wouldn't leave. They wouldn't leave their homes. Sergeant Conrad Grayson is the guy that I was reading about. And he said, we were begging people to leave and they didn't take us seriously. They want to pack some clothes or fight it in the backyard with a garden hose. They don't seem to understand that this is unlike any fire we've seen. He said, if these people don't move fast, they're going to become charcoal briquettes. And people wouldn't leave. They had 24 people die in those fires. All of them could have been prevented if people would have just listened and left. But they wouldn't leave. There was another neighbor talking about how he had tried to encourage his neighbors to leave as he was going and he was ready to go. And he said, these people looked like they were packing for a trip. The ones who listened to me and left the area lived. The ones who didn't actually died. And my question this morning, as I read that, it resonated with me so much. Are we in a place with our identity where we're dying? Are we in a place where we're struggling so much with figuring out who we are, or maybe not even trying anymore? Where we've given up and we've taken on what the world says about us. We've taken on this thing that the world says, maybe you are just a teacher, you are just a dad, you are just a doctor, you are just, and let that keep going. Are we at a place where we're dying each day inside because we're not listening to the voice of God that is saying, number one, you are my beloved. Number one, you are valuable. Number one, you are loved. Number one, I want to be with you. I believe that if our identity starts at the core with that, the rest will start to fill in. Is it possible this morning that you, like those people who needed to gather all those other things, are more concerned with gathering the things you think that form your identity than listening to the voice of God that says, don't worry about all those things. They're not quite as important as you think. Are you trying to save the things that seem important to your identity and dying a little inside while doing it? Friends, I believe God has a message for you this morning. God wants you to live. Jesus came first and foremost that you might have life and that you would live it in an abundant way. God's message for Jacob when Jacob sits down is, I am with you. I love you. And I want life for you. Being on the run and hiding in the dark is not life. God wants life for you. Be open to the life-giving identity that God has given you. And then, friends, do the hard part. Respond to it. Listen hard. Be open to what God has to say and respond to it. And God's promise is that God will be with you every step of the way.